Yeah. Sorry. Please continue.
Okay. Thank you. Inquiries discovered that payments had been made to a contractor not on the procurement framework, and this amounted to some £2.1 million over a period of 7 years. No allegations were made relating to work not being carried out or being subject to inflated invoices. A senior manager within Roads Services resigned during the course of the investigation. During employee interviews, a number of additional allegations were made, and these were also investigated. Evidence was found to support a number of the allegations, which were passed to Police Scotland, and no evidence was found to substantiate others. One other allegation relates to an area out with the scope of the investigation, but will be picked up in phase two. HR management are also reviewing the report in relation to any staff issues. A number of weaknesses in relation to internal processes and procedures were identified, and the Chief Internal Auditor has recommended actions to address these as a matter of urgency. These are all set out in the report. In addition, Midlothian Council's external auditors, EY, have been commissioned to perform phase two, undertaking work to include detailed analysis of the actual spend and services, focusing on reviewing the frameworks and contracts in place and comparing this to the suppliers where spend was made. And also following initial analysis, targeting certain frameworks and contracts and performing detailed review to verify if the actual work performed is consistent with the procurement decision. EY will be assisted by the Council's internal audit and corporate fraud team with scope to include areas identified during the Phase 1 investigation. The purpose of this wider piece of work is to investigate whether these failings found within the road service are in any way systemic within the organisation. No allegations were made relating to work not being carried out or subject to inflated invoices. Therefore, this did not form part of the Phase 1 work. However, weaknesses identified through the investigation highlight this as a possible risk, and the work carried out in Phase 2 will either identify issues requiring further work or give assurance on the actual spend on the roads work carried out and delivery against the work specified. As the chair of the committee said, officers and members are reminded of the importance of maintaining confidentiality to preserve the Council's position going forward and to enable the next steps to be concluded in a proper and thorough fashion through internal audit, EY and Police Scotland. And the recommendation in front of you today is that the audit committee is asked to note the current position and plan next steps relating to the investigation of the roads contract management. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Laurie. Members, any questions, comments? Councillor Milligan.
Chair, thank you. Chair, obviously, it's now some 6 months since these allegations were first put to me, along with several other senior councillors, and we passed them on to Kenneth Laurie as the Chief Executive. Having read this report here today, I'm going to reiterate the point, and I would like it to appear in a minute, that I feel really frustrated that we can speak with no surety here at all without having sight of the full Phase 1 report. I have now asked for that on at least four occasions, and on four occasions been refused citing the police ongoing inquiry as the reason I can't have that. I'm baffled as to how and what risk I am to the police ongoing inquiry. Most, if not anything I'm saying here, is near sheer guesswork without having that knowledge and seeing the details of that report. Any agreement we give to is this the right way to go forward, is this covering all the bases, are based on no sound judgments and are simply based on the recommendations within this report. So therefore, I think all I will be able to agree here today is to note what you're having to say, because I have absolutely no factual matters in front of me to judge whether what we're now agreeing is phase two is actually the right way to do, or have we missed anything? I have no idea without having seen that report, and neither do I have any idea at all if every issue has been covered in phase one without seeing that report, or whether the conclusions drawn for phase one are correct. And I think it's almost impossible for the administration to do its job without seeing that report. I do, however, acknowledge that the police have very strongly recommended that this isn't passed to anybody that doesn't have an exact need to know. The question mark is, does the administration need to know that? And I would argue very strongly it certainly does. Where the report, and I think the report is lacking, and I think we need to move quite quickly, and it's trying to separate out here what are internal control matters and internal control failings, and to separate them from what the other areas of criminality where they didn't cross over as. And I think we very quickly need to get a report back on how and what failed internally, keeping aside the criminality. We have spent year after year after year sitting here being told that the systems that were in place would prevent exactly what we think has happened here just now. I'm at a loss to understand how any firm knowing the procurement system has managed to get on it, irrespective of any amounts of briefings I've got, no matter if the systems and the way that that's dealt with now are different. There weren't any different back in 2011, 2012. There were some slight differences, but there were still systems in place to stop this happening. And how it could continue for that length of time without either our senior officers noticing it, our procurement, our finance, our audit, all went for that lengthy period of time, and it just beggars belief. We can't wait for the completion of a criminal investigation and maybe even a criminal case, if that comes about after it, for us to take action on this, an action that we're sure will make sure that this can't happen again, or certainly cut back the chances of it happening again. So we really need to understand quite quickly what failed internally, what were the controls that were in place and how did they fail, and how do we stop that from happening again? And I genuinely think we need to move quite quickly on that for this committee, indeed for the council, to have any assurance or feel any assurance that it's taking the appropriate action.
Mr. Murray.
Thank you, Chair. I can understand the frustration of members of the committee in relation to not seeing the report, and I think I've been very clear in myself, is that I'm not going to go against the very strong police advice that has been given to me. And indeed, in the context of the fact that members are, in a difficult position whereby we are setting out actions that we regard as important to take forward and take forward urgently in terms of the internal control environment. And it is difficult for members to make a judgment about the suitability of these or otherwise. And indeed, that's why the recommendation today is no more than asking you to note the work that has been done. We're not seeking an approval, so to speak. We're asking you to note the work that has been taken forward. In relation to the point about needing to move quickly, I think we all feel that urgency about addressing these situations and getting to the root of why these things have happened, and ensuring that the systems we have in place are as robust as they possibly can be. We can never give 100% assurance, but I think we need to do absolutely everything we can to do that. And I suppose it was partly with that in mind, rather than waiting till police and other work had been taken forward in the back of the phase one report. For all of the limitations of what we could report, I felt it was important that we did report to the audit committee in public to the extent that we could to set out the fact that we do take these matters seriously and there are actions to be taken and that we're putting these actions in place. So absolutely agree with the need to move quickly. I think we all want that, and I think that the sooner we can come back to this committee with further information specifically on the internal and governance issues, that would be certainly a good thing.
Councillor Smale.
Chief Executive, can you give us any comfort that there can be no other situation in Midlothian Council where a counterparty is on our payment system but is not actually in the procurement framework? My second question is, we have a very strict tendering process, and in that, every 5 years maximum, there has to be a retendering. Did this entity go through the tendering process, in which case tenders below 50,000 can be received and must be opened in the presence of the chief official or the head of service? What's that procedure not followed here?
Thank you. I'm going to ask my colleagues in audit to come in on the payment system and specifically that that question in relation to the 50,000 and the procurement approach.
There could be a possibility that somebody, that a company, could be on our payments database but not on our procurement database. Exceptions could be where there's been a non-competitive action and there's a requirement to fill in a form and get that signed by the Director of Resources. There could be a variety of reasons why you wouldn't go out to competition, but you just have to just justify why you've done that. There are some small payments that could be made via sundry code, but they are supposed to be one-off payments only and usually quite small in nature. But one of the recommendations we have made in our report is that there's a reconciliation done between the contracts register and the supplier database just to see if there is a mismatch there and to investigate any anomalies. The question on the tendering, open the tendering, I think we looked at that, and that the actual tender process was okay. All the controls were complied with. It wasn't the actual tender process that has been brought into question here. It's more the contract management side of things rather than the tendering side of things.
Councillor Hardy.
I note the recommendations, and I'm sure I'm not the only elected member who looks at these recommendations with concern, not because I don't think they're a good idea, but because I'm shocked that these recommendations were not normal processes and procedures that were being followed and having been followed for a number of years. It's wholly unacceptable that the entire framework of compliance that should be adhered to by a local authority appears to have been utterly circumvented in this circumstance. And it seems utterly inconceivable that it's not been picked up by the various other departments who should have been making sure that a compliance process, including appropriate due diligence checks, were being carried out. And I think, rightly, all elected members and indeed all taxpayers in Midlothian should have concerns, not only that this has happened, but concerns over the potential financial management of the local authority, as I think there's serious concerns about some of these basic matters of compliance that have not been adhered to, and we should be concerned about why they've not been adhered to in the first place, rather than why they're now being recommended that they should be happening when they should have been happening for the last 7 years.
Mr. Loy.
Yes, thank you. I mean, I think we're all exceptionally concerned by that, the fact that these have clearly been circumvented in these circumstances. And I suppose the purpose of, as well as taking forward the investigation in relation to the specific matter, one of the important aspects for certainly myself as Chief Executive, I think also for the Audit Committee, is to ensure there is nothing systemic in this, and that is the reason why we do need to revisit these things. These systems are in place, they should be robustly adhered to, but we have an example where that has not been the case. Therefore, we need to revisit these various aspects as a matter of urgency, which is why these recommendations are there.
Councillor Muirhead.
Yeah, Kenneth, you talk about, you know, needing to ensure that there's nothing systemic in these cases, but the recommendations which the auditors, the chief internal auditors, asked to be addressed as a matter of urgency, a whole host of them, if you ask the question, why are we suggesting that staff be instructed that are involved in tendering contracts and allocating work to contracts to read and acknowledge the council's policies on bribery and corruption, gifts and hospitality, if the auditors have seen it justified to suggest that this needs to be explained to our staff, that suggests to me that there's concern that there is a systematic problem. And that goes for a whole number of the recommendations that are made here. Like Derek, I'm extremely frustrated that as councillors, when we are discussing matters of taxi drivers' licences, we can be given information about ongoing cases that haven't been decided by a court, and we're given that information in confidence and asked to make judgments as to whether somebody's suitable for a taxi driver's licence, but we are not in a position to be able to see in confidence information related to an alleged fraud within our council. The council that we have got responsibilities and to scrutinise on behalf of the people of Midlothian. So I cannot understand that. I can see it from the point of view of the police in terms of taking a default position that, you know, the less people that know, the better, from the point of view of pursuing criminality. But there are so many areas here that are issues, I think, of controls within this council that have failed, that we need to have an oversight and details on. The problem is, you find it actually quite difficult to ask questions because you've not seen the report. You can't even make a judgment yourself to say, well, I can't ask that because that seems to relate to the criminal side of things. But to me, it's all being lumped together and we're being refused information on the basis that it might jeopardise the criminal investigation. And I certainly am not happy with that either. I would also like to make the point that, you know, we've spoken earlier about the whistleblowing side of things. A lot of councillors at the briefing earlier raised the issues about the whistleblowing. It seems quite clear to me, irrespective of how good the process is, that employees of this council don't seem to have the confidence in using the whistleblowing system when, in this instance, they felt they had to go to elected members with their concerns rather than go through the process. And what I'd like to raise, because I've done a wee bit digging, is that there are other councils that use total third parties. I'm not talking about a council employee that's designated as being independent like the auditors are. I'm talking about separate companies. I believe there's a company called Safecall that are used by other councils in this area, and they handle the whistleblowing inquiries totally. And I think that's something that we need to look at. Now, I'm not saying that the whistleblowing procedures that we've set up are inadequate. What I'm just reflecting the fact that the evidence of this case shows that our, or at least some of our employees, didn't have confidence in it because they felt that they've had to go via an alternative route because of their concerns about what's taking place within the council. So there are loads of questions I'd love to ask today, just even about the pretty bland information that's available here before us today. I'd love to go into detail. The problem is that whenever you get into the meat of it, because one question would lead to another, you're going to come across a situation where you're going to be potentially jeopardising the police case. And unfortunately, as I say, hidden within all that is the potential for really gross, and I think quite evident, gross failings within the controls that this council employ, and that they ultimately we're responsible for and accountable to the public for.
Mr. Murray.
Thank you. I mean, in relation to the point about sharing the report, I don't think there's anything I can add to what I said earlier on. In relation to the whistleblowing procedure, again, I mean, I don't have the statistics in front of me. I think there's it's clear even from my own experience that across many parts of the council, I think we do have employees who are very confident about being able to come forward and feel safe to do so if they have concerns about issues. And there's various routes that can be taken, of which whistleblowing is only one. But I accept the issue that, for whatever reason, that route wasn't taken on this occasion. And if there is the external option that simply gives staff another route, then I think it would certainly be worth our while looking into that as a possibility. In terms of the recommended actions to be taken, which the Chief Internal Auditor has put forward, then yes, certainly these are being looked into because of concerns we have about weaknesses that need to be addressed on the evidence of the specific case that we've been looking at, and therefore the need to look at these more broadly. I don't know, Jill, if there's anything you want to add to that at all.
No, I mean, I think just in addition, the recommendations are quite broad, and it's good practice in terms of any particular incident. We, as part of our counter-fraud arrangements, we cast an eye across other cases, across other local authorities and in the public sector to see whether or not there are any lessons that can be learned. And indeed, we then make some recommendations about how we could potentially improve our control environment. This is no different. It's just more local in terms of an issue that's happened in Midlothian Council. But the recommendations are designed to enhance the controls, some of which already exist. And I think it's good practice just to raise awareness of some of the key things around our safeguarding public money and re-emphasise those aspects, and indeed re-emphasise the mechanisms that are in place if they're applied that actually protect employees of this council in fulfilling their responsibilities. So it's a good opportunity just to heighten awareness so that lots of people across the council are looking at their own service areas.
Sorry, Mr. Milligan, then Mr. Devink.
Can I just clarify something? Are you saying that a number of these recommendations are put in for good governance, and that there's nothing behind them? There's no reason for some of these particular recommendations being put? And if that's the case, why does the preceding paragraph before them talk about addressing these weaknesses a matter of urgency? I might have picked you up wrong, but I thought that was what you were suggesting, that this is just good governance and you know, there's nothing behind that. Are you saying there's nothing behind it, or there is?
No, there actually are identified weaknesses that have come through the phase one work that underpins all 1 to 14 recommendations that are in there. What I am saying is that a standard response to something like this is to look across the organisation. So part of that will be carried out by Internal Audit and indeed with EY as part of our phase two work to check some of the controls across the wider organisation to indeed provide that assurance around is this a single service issue or indeed is it something more systemic. But there are identified weaknesses within the control environment that underpin each of the recommendations that have been made, and thus my recommendation that these are addressed as a matter of urgency.
Mr. Devine.
Well, not only was I have I been a member of this audit committee for a few months, for 5 years I was a councillor, and I had a mantra that was drummed into me day after day, good governance and due process, and we must be robust. All those weasel words when 300,000 per annum was siphoned off by members of the staff of Midlothian makes me pretty upset, because I feel that I have been very badly misled in those 5 years. And when you now talk about the police and the investigation, and we can't tell you anything, if you haven't lost anything, which appears to be the case, then it's very difficult to sue people for loss. If they have been wrong, that's a different story, but that's not the police matter. It is a clear management matter. And I cannot believe how 300,000 a year could not be spotted by those that run the finance department. I am just absolutely gutted that this could have happened, and I look forward to hearing the full story.
I think that point's well taken. I'm not sure if it would benefit the committee to go through the recommendations that have been made and talk a little further on that, or whether, given the restrictions on the information that we have access to at this stage, whether we move forward. For me, the key finding was, or the key recommendation is number two in this report, to review the roles and responsibilities of senior managers to ensure an adequate understanding, awareness and accountability for day-to-day activities undertaking their areas of responsibility. That, for me, was something which was surprising, that senior managers can hold a title of being senior managers without being aware they're responsible for managing. Sorry, Councillor Milligan.
It's very difficult to go through each of the recommendations without having seen this report. It's just absolutely frustrating that we have to do this. However, it's very clear that there have been internal failings. Now, I don't know what the internal failings are, whether it's a system that's failed, whether it's a person that's failed, whether it's a group of people or a group of systems that have failed. What I do know is that there have been failings. And the question I then have is, when are we likely to see a report? Because I think we need to see a report very quickly, within the next calendar month, certainly, as to what the internal failings were. We're not talking about the criminal side. This is about the system that we had in place and the people that we had in place, and how this failed, and what could have, should have been done, or what part of the system did we fail to get right? Because, like Peter Devank, we've constantly been told, you've got good governance, you've got to do these things by the book, and we've got this system in place. Now, I can remember when we talked about procurement coming along many years ago, it was We were I'm told quite clearly, in fact, I think it was a roads company that were in the middle of taking councils to court, and for Lucy a right to work in that. And we massively strengthened your procurement team at that time to make sure that we were compliant with everything. Now, there's a lot of outstanding questions that are still... the provost asked the question about, with the length of time that a contract's supposed to last, how did it manage to last 7 years? And I'm not sure that I understand that. Without understanding what the proper failings were here and the system failures, that then we're not going to know. So, I mean, how quickly can we separate, Chief Executive, what are internal failings and systems failings within the council from the side that would infringe or impinge on the police investigation or any further investigation, and when will this audit committee and indeed the council get to see what has happened here?
Mr. Laurie.
Well, what we've put in train is work to be done both by internal audit and by EY to move us forward on this. Now, the timescales for that are quite tight, and we're endeavouring to do that work as quickly as possible. At this stage, I don't have a end point for you, but if the audit committee is requesting through you, Chair, for an update before the end of the next calendar month, which I think is what Councillor Milligan suggested, we could do our utmost to endeavour to...
Sorry, Chief Executive, what I'm asking for is stuff that we should already have. We should already know what the failings were, what systems failed, how did this happen. This is information you should already have that's separate from the police inquiry. This is about the systems failure. How did this manage to get past the system that was put in there to stop it having happened? And I think it's really critical that we start to look at that to make sure that the recommendations that are here in front of us, that we're comfortable that there's enough being done. Because, as Jim rightly points out, the context of these recommendations are saying that in the initial Phase 1 report, weaknesses were found in these areas. So we need to know what the areas were and what the weaknesses were and how we go about closing that gap. Now, it might be that we're happy with all the recommendations after we see that, but I think we'll have to see what the failings in your own system are. And that should be easy to separate for the police report.
And again, I might ask Jill just to come in a minute on this. My sense is that, yes, of course, on the basis of what we have done, which is a fact-finding investigation in relation to the allegations raised, that we clearly do have a lot of information. I think some of the actions in Phase 2 are going to enable us to explain that and bring it forward in a fuller way. I think that it is possible to extract the issues which relate to governance from those that relate to the police investigation. I don't think that's a wholly straightforward process, because I think these things are quite intermingled. We can certainly endeavour to do that. What I don't have for you right now is an answer saying we can do this and we'll have completed it in this timescale. What I was suggesting, that if the audit committee want us to report back, for example, during the month of June, we will endeavour to do that. I'm just looking to my colleagues to see if they want to add or comment on that.
So certainly in terms of the Phase 1 investigation was primarily focused on investigating a number of allegations. Those have given rise to some of the the weaknesses and therefore some of the recommended improvement actions. Our phase two work, so jointly, which we've actually commenced the phase two work with EY, and the primary objective in relation to the, well, there are two primary objectives in relation to the phase two work, is looking at that end-to-end process across the whole council, just to understand roles and responsibilities, understand the key controls at different points as part of that end-to-end process, and also evaluate the entire control framework. Some of the weaknesses that have been identified relate to specific controls. Part of the recommendations in terms of the improvement actions are designed to try and improve the overall internal control and governance environment as a whole. So the phase one in terms of that end-to-end, and we hopefully through that will identify more information associated with that, and we'll be going through the same process that if there are indeed more weaknesses identified, we will be bringing forward further recommendations. The second objective in terms of that phase two work, and it's to provide assurance about whether or not this is a single service or single contract matter, or indeed whether or not it's systemic across the council, is more of a deep dive into a range of contracts across the council. And we've commenced on some of that work at the moment, so between internal audit and EY external audit.
Councillor Smile, then Councillor, go ahead.
The response suggests that across a wide range of our activities, we do not actually have segregation working, but that's not my understanding. For years on the audit committee, it was almost the first thing that the internal audit team would look at is segregation. When we come to June, are you going to be in a position to confirm to us that, subject to the de minimis, of which I think is £500, that there is proper segregation across all the invoicing of the council to external contractors?
So certainly as part of the end-to-end process and the selection of sample of contracts and the testing within those, one of the key controls will be segregation of duties. So we will be looking at that and hopefully provide some assurances around whatever is found, and indeed if there are improvements to be made, we'll make those recommendations. One particular aspect in relation to this is that the recommendations in terms of 1 to 14 are recommendations relating to management's responsibility for the internal control and governance environment. Their responsibilities for the governance and controls in terms of establishing the appropriate control framework, and indeed the monitoring that those controls are effective. So we've had confirmation from both the Chief Executive and some of our senior management team, a commitment to progressing those actions. And again, as part of the phase two work, we'll be following up on progress in terms of implementation as part of that phase two work.
Follow up, Councillor Smile, and then Councillor.
Will we have that confirmation on segregation by June? It's absolutely essential. And is there anyone else in this council capable of signing up to £50,000 without having a cross-check by another senior official or by a councillor?
I cannot definitively say. I mean, part of my statutory responsibilities as your Chief Internal Auditor, in June I will be bringing forward the required internal audit annual assurance opinion, and as part of that, in light of this issue and some of the other work that internal audit has been involved in, I will be providing an opinion on that basis. We can't preempt what we might find as part of phase two, as part of our public sector internal audit standards, to have independence and our objectivity. So we can't kind of preempt what we might find, but ultimately my objective is to provide to management and to this committee some assurances around your internal control and governance environment, one of the key elements being the segregation of duties and indeed the delegated powers of officers about what council resource they can commit to.
Can I go to Councillor Muirhead? Is that a follow-up?
Just very quickly, is there any other executive within Midlothian Council who has a discretion of up to £50,000 without any counter-signature?
Each officer has delegated powers that have been signed off by their line manager. So in some services, it's, say, £5,000, £10,000. But no officer in the council can sign more than £50,000 without having a double signature, which should be at head of service level. So that's the cut-off. But there certainly will be officers in the council who have that authority, but that will have been approved by their line manager. And then over £50,000, it has to be countersigned.
Would it be possible to have a quick run round the departments and for the next audit committee in June have a list of the names of individuals with signing authority and their levels? Is that a simple thing to ascertain?
I mean, that information should be available because we have an authorised signatory database which lists every officer's authority limits, so it should be obtainable, but whether that should be public information, I'm not quite sure. I might have to take advice on that, but I can certainly come back to you on that.
Mr. Turpey.
Chair, just to jump in on the last point that the internal auditor made there, is that part of the discussions we've had with Police Scotland have been about preventing corporate fraud happening, and one of the things would be that if a list of officials who had authority to sign up to £50,000 became publicly available, those staff would be seen as being vulnerable to approach, and that's obviously something that could be certainly circulated in terms of numbers, but with the names redacted or perhaps only given out in private.
Thank you. Councillor Smale, do you think that would, if we had that as a private issue?
Yes, it's a systemic issue, it's a principle, and it's something we can act on very quickly if we feel that will reduce the risk to the council.
Thank you. Councillor Muirhead.
Yeah, I can understand why we would want to have a certain amount of, well, the audit committee meetings in public, but if we really want to get to into the bones of this, and that means going into a private session to ensure that we get the level of information that we need, then I think we just have to go down that road. So I wouldn't have a problem, and I don't think the public would have a problem with us going down that road in these circumstances. Can I just challenge you a wee bit, Kenneth, and I hope I'm interpreting what Councillor Mulligan was asking for correctly. What was certainly, I don't think he was asking for, was a progress report in a month. And I think, to be honest, his suggestion that we wait a month is maybe a wee bit generous, because I think what Councillor Mulligan was asking for was some additional information. We've just accepted that the 14 recommendations here are in about the internal management potential failings of this council. That information has been conducted. Your answer to an earlier question went on quite a lot about phase two, but phase one's been conducted, and what we're wanting to see is the information that was gleaned in phase one that doesn't impinge on the criminal side, but is actually about the systematic failures within the council, and I think that can be done fairly quickly. And Kenneth, you're talking about being not a wholly straightforward job. It's a lot easier for you than it is for us, because we've not seen the report. You'll be able to determine what you can say to us and what you can't say to us, but whatever is there that is about systematic failures within this council has to come to elected members, to the audit committee, as soon as possible, and I think that could be done very timorously, and I don't think we would be waiting for a month. And we certainly wouldn't be sitting here happy with a progress report in a month's time. I think we need to have a report here in, as soon as possible, that explains the background to why these 14 recommendations are here.
Mr. Lawry.
Yeah, I mean, I apologise for sounding hesitant. I suppose it is the point you raise about clearly going away and then being clear about what can be brought forward and what there might be limitations on. But, I mean, certainly given the importance of the issue and the governance role of the Audit Committee, to bring a report back, for example, to the next meeting of this committee would be, I would have thought, an important thing to do. I'm happy to do that.
Just to answer your question, Councillor Muirhead, at the end of the meeting, I was going to suggest the next meeting is at 9 a.m. on the 19th of June, having been delayed from the 5th of June to allow for further work on this investigation. So the plan is 9 a.m. on the 19th of June before, I think there's an 11 a.m. meeting for the Council as well.
Just to pick up on one point there, Chair, the reason there was a request to delay the Audit Committee in June was not because of this investigation, because the impact of this investigation on other work that the audit team were hoping to report on in June.
Councillor Milligan.
I just think that this warrants a meeting to discuss this and in great detail. I don't think it should be getting mixed up with other business at this time. I think that we want a special meeting here to go through what the internal failings were, what the system's failings were, what was management failings. We just need to understand, as Jim says, what we know up until now, what failed to allow this to go wrong. To make sure we have a clear understanding, to make sure that as we move forward, we're taking the actions that we are comfortable with, and we'll have a clearer idea how we're in this position. I'm no keen to be waiting any longer than 4 weeks, and I think Jim makes the point, we should already have that information. I don't think the police will have any problems whatsoever if this is about our internal controls and about our internal systems and how they were either failed, got ruined, or what have you. So I would think we should be able to do this really quickly.
I'm happy as the chair of the committee to go along with that suggestion that we have a further special meeting as soon as possible to receive a more detailed private report that we can deal with in confidence without prejudice to other actions that are likely to follow. However, I don't know what timescale is appropriate for getting that information to us in a format that we can use. So I'll have to be guided by that by the audit team or the legal team. Mr. Lawry?
Yeah, thank you. I don't have an answer to that, because it's not something we've specifically discussed about what the timescale would be for extracting the relevant pieces. But Councillor Milligan has suggested 4 weeks, and if that's the request of the Audit Committee, we'll certainly endeavour to fit in with that timescale, subject to a suitable time being found that suits members of the committee.
Are you telling me that this information doesn't exist? I know you've got to extract it, but how long does it take to extract that information and get some clearance for the police in terms of what you put to us, that it's not going to infringe anything? All this work has been done and, is, as far as I understand, has been completed pretty much some time ago. And there, the work's been done, the information is there. All you need to do, to some extent, is sanitise it. How does that take 4 weeks when it's so important that we get this looked into properly?
Sorry, Chair, I'm not sure this is going to help, but sitting here right now, I do not know the answer to your question. If I knew the answer to your question, I would give you that answer. I do not know the time it will take to extract that information. If any of my colleagues can offer a view on that. Otherwise, I suppose what I'd request is that we take that request away, we liaise with the chair of the committee in terms of a time for a further meeting.
Councillor Baird.
Thank you, Chair. I suppose just to back up Jim's point there, I would be happy to accept the four-week point as a hard limit, so that if it cannot be prepared, if it cannot be sanitised within those 4 weeks and brought back to us, that it's just given to us in its entirety and after 4 weeks.
Councillor Smale.
I'm conscious that we have Ernst & Young here and also the Section 95 officer. Are there any implications of the position we have for the draft accounts for Midlothian Council for the last financial year, 17-18?
Mr. Fairley.
I suppose that question is directed at me. Like colleagues around the table, I'm not cited on the detailed report, which is with the police. So I'm not in a position to answer that question. But as we move towards the position where my Section 94 role have to sign off on the accounts, then I'll take advice from the monitoring officer at that point as to where we are and what the implications might or might not be.
Councillor Muirhead.
Can I ask, what's the deadline for our senior auditor signing off the audit opinion on the council? I've maybe not got the terminology right there, but I know that there is a responsibility to sign off the... is it right? Whatever you need to sign off, what's the deadline for that?
From my memory, I think last September, we, as an audit committee, authorised the signing, and at that point, Mr. Reid signed off, but I'll be guided by the Ernst & Young representatives. Is any better?
Yeah, it would be a similar time frame this year, so September.
Something not got to be done by our internal audit, though, prior to that? That's a question I was really more...
Yeah, so what I've referred to was the statutory requirement of internal audit, which is for me to provide an annual audit opinion on the internal control and governance environment that is operating, and to provide both management and the audit committee with assurance. My intention is to bring that report to an audit committee in June. I'm not aware whether there's a specific time target, but it's good practice for it to be within a few months of the end of the financial year, and that's practice that certainly I'm used to with my shared chief auditor hat on. That's certainly the practice I'm used to in Scottish Borders Council.
I would expect that, short of getting a lot of answers to the questions that we would have arising out of this report, it would make me quite difficult for that assurance to be given as early as June, unless we act as quickly as we can to get the details behind what we've seen in the report here today.
I don't know if there's any other comments, but I think we've probably exhausted discussion. As I understand it, the committee feels that there is some frustration in receiving this report, given the limitations that have been advised by Police Scotland to the extent of the report that's there. As such, we can only note the report, subject to the caveat that we are not privy to the information on which the report is based, so we can't really form a judgment on whether that report is an appropriate response. We take that on trust from the internal audit team, and we also ask for an extra private session to receive details of the Phase 1 report, redacted as much as is appropriate, in order to run a private session to, I think the terminology might be, deep dive into the background to these recommendations and form a better view. Is that a fair summary of the discussion that members feel? Councillor Smale.
Yes, I join to that, that as soon as we can take action on segregation and on the identification of similar vulnerabilities in the system, we should do so, and your work should be formed so that come June, if anything can be authorised by the Council and by the Audit Committee to strengthen our controls, it should be done as soon as possible.
Thank you. Thank you to the internal audit team and to everyone involved in the investigation so far, albeit we don't know exactly how extensive that work's been, but thank you to the work you have been doing. Thanks also to those individuals who stepped forward and raised the issues to elected representatives to enable us to look into this and to hopefully make progress in solving what seems to be a fairly significant issue, but we'll find out how significant in due course. So thank you to everyone involved. As I was saying earlier, the next committee meeting scheduled for 19th of June for regular business, but with a further special meeting to be agreed as soon as we have sufficient information to have such a meaningful discussion. Is there anyone wants to say anything else before I draw the meeting to a close? Okay, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.